I'm Norm Shealy. NormShealy.com. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight. Tonight I have a friend of mine who we tried to do this show for about 10 years, and for some reason we just never made it happen, but recently came back into light on my scale of vision, and now I know why. He has a wonderful new technology, and it's actually one of the most amazing things that I've ever seen that involves consciousness and a tool to help you learn how to manipulate your reality. So welcome, Don Estes, and thank you for taking the time to come on my show tonight.
Great, thanks. It's great to be here, Eva. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. I'm so pleased to have you. Now I know why we never got it right all those years ago, because you have this wonderful new software. So before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and where people can find you and how you came to do what it is that you're now doing?
Okay, my current position is as director of Psiometric Science Incorporated. Some of your listeners may know me as being in charge of InnerSense Incorporated, but we've recently reformed the company with a UK company called Psiometrics, and now the company's called Psiometric Science Incorporated. And we've been in business since 1984, developing and designing transformational technologies. And I got my start back in the 60s when we were, as we used to say, experimenting with our neuropeptides of our brain back in the 60s. But it became very apparent to me that you could not alter your state of consciousness by doing it by popping a pill or taking a pill or something like that. It's much better if you can do it yourself, if you can achieve those states of mind yourself. So for the past 20 or 30 years, we've been developing technology that assists a person in being able to achieve those non-ordinary states of mind without having to do it chemical-wise.
So I've never asked you this, but what is your educational background? I've never thought to ask you that before.
Well, I graduated from West Georgia College, which is just a little north of you there, which is a subsidiary of the University System of Georgia. And at the time, it was the headquarters world for the U.S. or the International Psychotronic Association. So the psychology department there was based on Gestalt psychology instead of clinical psychology. So we got a good education in conscious kind of technology there, as well as regular kinds of technology, kind of marrying the soft sciences with the hard science.
So is your degree in psychology?
No, actually, my degree is in biochemistry.
Oh, okay.
I graduated with a master's degree in biochemistry, and for years I ran hospital laboratories. I got a really good education on human-machine interfacing.
I thought you had some kind of hard science degree back there. I just couldn't remember what Lisa Tully told me that it was. I just wanted folks to know.
It was just kind of a combination of a lot of different things there with that scientific medical background, along with my musical background and my love of consciousness and light and sound and color and all those things that basically put me in the position that I'm in now.
I actually went out there to that college a few years ago and had dinner with Stanley Krippner. He had came to visit and was out there, so I got to meet all those people in the psychology department. It was a very cool place. Okay.
Yeah, he was one of the professors there when I was there, along with Raymond Moody and a lot of the other leaders in the consciousness technology industry.
He's a great fellow. So is Raymond. He's a great guy. Raymond turns out lives on this same road as my grandmother in Alabama, but I never knew it till just a few years back. Anyway, so I know you have lots of things that you do, but you're doing something right now that really interests me, and that's your Portical software. So I'd like for you to take a while and just tell us about it. But first of all, tell us about the science, I know you did it with an engineer, if I'm not mistaken, in Hawaii. But so tell us about him and what y'all do and the science, the research that you've done. Because next week we're going to do another show where we're going to talk about all the bells and whistles of this software, because it's quite complicated but very valuable. So just tell us, what is the Portico?
Okay, well, first of all, my partner is actually in Glastonbury in the U.K. He moved there about 15 years ago to place our supercomputer. We have a world-class supercomputer, and he wanted to place that right on the heart chakra of the planet. So he took it there and moved right next door to the Chalice Well, and now we have our supercomputer sitting on the heart grid of the planet. But basically, the science boils down to this. As you mentioned, it's not really complicated, but it is complex, so there's a lot to it. But at the most basic level, a human being is both an instrument and a player. We are a machine, but we're also the operator of the machine. We are a vehicle that we drive around, but we're the driver of the vehicle. My favorite way of saying it is that we have this instrument that we live inside of, and we're the player of the instrument. And all human suffering stems from the difference between those two aspects of oneself. And so our research has really been focused on how to get to that, how to measure that, how to know what a person is at the most basic primary level of reality. So we've been studying the wave function, the complex wave function that you've heard people talk about, the physicists talk about. When you observe the complex wave function, you collapse it into the reality that you're seeing or you're willing to see. So we know that the complex wave function holds all possibilities and all potential. So we've been studying this wave function, and we've been able to break it down into levels of reality that are much deeper than frequency. Almost everybody in the industry now talks about vibrations as being frequencies, and whereas that's true, frequency is really just a minor player in the whole process, and maybe we can talk about this a little bit next week. But we can break it down much further than frequency, all the way down past phase and magnitude, and all the way down past the sine wave and the cosine, to these two little values, these two little multiplier values called real and imaginary. The engineers call them real and imaginary. And what we've discovered, our main discovery, is that the real component is being generated by the player, whereas the imaginary component is being generated by the instrument. And intention can bring those two together, gather them up and combine them together, and as soon as it does, a manifestation occurs on this side of the quantum veil. So an example would be that we have an instrument lying against the wall over there, but it's not making any sound. But then all of a sudden, the musician picks it up and starts playing it, and beautiful music comes from it. So we have this spectral component coming from the instrument, but this time component coming from the player. And those get mixed together into the complex wave function. And what we've discovered is that human beings have this same issue. They have these same two parts of themselves, and they are firmly locked together. And what our technology does is it attempts to unlock that, unlock the difference between the real and the imaginary, the actual and the potential. And then we can do all kinds of interesting things with that, but by feeding that back to the person through all the sensory mechanisms so that they can see it and they can hear it and they can feel it. So we might feed one into one ear and the other one into the other ear and force the brain into resolving the difference between those two aspects of ourselves. And we find that when we do that, that it relieves the tension, because basically what's happening is that difference sets up a tension. That tension acts like a black hole that draws in people and events and circumstances and situations in an attempt to resolve the difference. So there's a lot of tension going on there. So we know that when you resolve that difference, you resolve that tension and things go a lot more smoothly. So that's basically, in a nutshell, the bottom line of our technology. We call it the Portico, which is kind of it's a play on words a little bit. It's kind of like a portal through to the other side, where intention basically creates everything, but also somewhat like an oracle to navigate yourself around in when you get there. So a person can express themselves into it. They can whisper or breathe or speak or talk or sing or tone or in any way express their intention into it, and it allows them to see their true inner radiance. There's a visual that's being drawn of the map of that that allows them to see their true aura, their true inner radiance, and also to hear their true inner voice. Because many people will hear phrases coming back to them that they're not even saying. So it basically kind of just turns on that switch in your brain where you're able to access that higher level of yourself and basically see it and hear it at the same time.
Hey, let me interrupt you here because you're telling us about this, but people don't have a visual yet about what you're talking about. So it's a program where you wear headphones and you listen and you breathe into it and describe this, you know, let them know that they have something to look at so they can kind of picture it.
So basically, under best case scenario, they would be wearing a headset that would include a set of headphones and a microphone at the same time. And anything that they express into the microphone is immediately processed by the instrument and split into those two aspects, the real and the imaginary. And then it's fed back to the person, one in one ear and the other in the other ear. And at the same time, we're drawing that on their computer screen. So we're taking these real and imaginary components, and we're actually just drawing them in Cartesian space right on their computer screen so that they can actually see what that looks like in its quantum state. So you get to really see and hear what your intention looks like and feels like at its most primary level of existence.
Now, this doesn't just pop up onto your screen. You actually have a program that's connected to these headphones, right?
Yes, you actually, it's just a simple download from our website, and just installs right on the computer, and then the person can do it right at home. Just a year ago, or really about 8 months ago, it took a world-class supercomputer to run this program, and a person had to travel and come to see us, and they had to go to an on-site location to have this done, and we had to actually take a one-time voice sample and send that over the internet to our supercomputer to process and then send it back. So we were losing a lot of information because of the bandwidth of the internet, and we knew we were losing a lot because it was just based on a single one-time statement of intention from the person. But now we have it working on modern laptops in real time. And a person can install it right on their computer, and they can use it anytime, anywhere, for as long as they want, in the comfort of their own surroundings, without having to go anywhere or have a facilitator to explain it all to them. It's all just right there for them to become their own therapist.
Now, this program, does it have anything to do with or the science behind it with string theory?
We are using a string theory to run our program, but it's a 12-dimensional string theory. We found two more dimensions than the standard model calls for. I think most of the physicists now have it at 10 dimensions. A few of them have it at 11. But actually what they've done is they've sort of discounted or forgotten the womb in which all of it exists. And so for us, when we do our math, we find 12 deterministic dimensions, and we find an additional 10 stochastic, chaotic kind of dimensions that are operated by the strange attractor, which is that thing that always steps in to undo everything that humans do.
Elaborate on that, please. Stochastic.
Well, if you ask a physicist how does reality get formed, they will go back to their standard story of the four forces. So they'll say that there are these four forces that can control these particles. They call these forces the electromagnetic force, the strong force, the weak force, and gravity. But actually, in reality, what those are is they are attractors. There's the point attractor, the circle attractor, the toroidal attractor, and the strange attractor. the point attractor, if you align yourself with that, it gets you just kind of caught up on something that you can't get yourself out of, where you're just stuck on something. If you're in the circle attractor, if you align with that, you get caught up in a loop to where you just keep looping around and doing the same thing over and over again. If you align yourself with the strange attractor, which is what a lot of people teach to do, you basically are allowing the universe to take over and run your life for us. So you're just kind of going along with the flow and responding to whatever happens to you. However, if you align yourself with the toroidal attractor, it's a dynamic flowing kind of situation that you can learn how to have what we call constrained liberty. So you don't have full liberty. You have a constrained liberty where you constrain yourself to live within the guidelines of the culture and the mores of the group that you're living within. So a lot of what we teach is about how to align yourself with the right kind of attractors so that you attract the right things into your life, or at least the ones that you desire and not the ones that you don't.
So how do you do that teaching?
Well, a lot of it comes from just using the technology and being able to watch these attractors happen right on your screen. And you can see when all of the pixels get drawn into certain little areas, and you see all kinds of shapes and geometries there, and all of those have meaning. So there's a little bit of a learning curve to learn what all these geometries mean. But one of the most interesting things that I can share with your listeners is that if you were to ask physicist or scientist now, what is the most primary level of reality? Most scientists now would say the complex wave function, but research has just shown, in fact, there's been articles out just this past few weeks about how they've now shown how time and space are not fundamental to reality, that the only thing that's fundamental to it is geometry. And the thing that I have to share with everyone is that where does the geometry come from? And it comes from these combinations of these real and imaginary components. So I could take a series of real and imaginary components and start adding them together, and I could come up with a shape that looks just like you or just like me or just like anyone who's listening to us right now. So these real and imaginary components are definitely the most primary, fundamental level of reality. And it's all homogenous there. There's no differences in things. If you have an issue over here, then you have to treat the physical, the mental, emotional, the spiritual aspects of it. But over there on the other side, it's all homogenous. The only difference there is the difference between real and imaginary. So all you have to do is just resolve that, and all the issues balance out and go away.
So next week we're going to talk about what all of this stuff means, but what is the science behind what you've done, what you've created? I know you guys spent years perfecting this and getting it ready. What are some of the experiments that you did?
Well, you know, when I was back in Atlanta, where you are now, we didn't really have the portico. We didn't really have any of the biofeedback technology. All we had in those days was the vibrasound wave table, which would allow a person to see, hear, and feel music all at the same time with their eyes closed. And even with that technology, we had amazing results with being able to help people get into profoundly relaxed states, but be extremely alert at the same time. And people would have profound aha experiences and epiphanies that would go on basically to change their lives. So it was only in the 90s that I started really looking at how to personalize the vibrasound experience for people, and that's when we started coming up with all these different means of biofeedback. And you're right, we've been doing this for a long time. The supercomputer technology I mentioned to you has been operational since 1996. And we've only recently been able to get that off of the supercomputer and make it work on modern computers. And that's only because of the fact that they're putting the graphics processors in the computers now, and we've been able to repurpose some of that to do some of the heavy math that's required for our process.
Wow. So don't know where to start. There's just so many things I want to understand. When you use this thing, what is the importance of breath and thought?
We have been doing very serious biometrics for about 20 years. So we've built very sophisticated brainwave analyzers, heart rate variability monitors, GSR meters, all kind of ways of looking at the biometrics of a human being. And we've convinced ourselves over the years that you can get better information about who a person is and what they want from their voice than you can from their brain or their heart. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because the voice is the mechanism that the universe gave us to explain and to define who we are, and or to express who we are and what we want. You don't really do that with your brain or your heart. They may play into it. The heart shows how you're feeling about things, and the brain shows how you're thinking about it. But they're not really the mechanism of the expression, the voice is. So we really believe that the voice is the biometric of choice to see and measure who a person is and what they want. So we've created this technology that is based on that and allows a person to breathe or speak or tone or in some way express themselves into it and see what that looks like and sounds like and feels like in the quantum world, and give them an opportunity to do something about it, to resolve it. When I feed one into one ear and the other into the other ear, the brain actually has to resolve those two different signals. And you actually hear the difference between the two, even though I'm not playing the difference between the two. The brain actually has to figure it out and actually plays it for you, and you hear it. But no one's that I know of has explained how that's even possible, because it's something that's not even there. It's just the difference between the two signals.
Can you use this to... I'm sorry, I paused. I just am paying close attention to what you're saying. Can you use this to manipulate your reality?
We use all reality to manipulate our reality. This just gives you an opportunity to get control of it. Because we're always setting up everything that happens to us. This just allows you to start realizing that everything you say gets put into motion. You know, when I grew up over there in Atlanta, we were real strict Southern Baptists, almost really primitive, what they call primitive Southern Baptists. There was a lot of rules and regulations. And I remember one of the biggest rules was that if you thought it, you might as well do it. And I just always used to cringe, because I would think that stuff all the time, so I was sure I was just going to go to hell. I couldn't stop myself from thinking thoughts that they were saying you couldn't think. But what I found out doing this research is that that's not true. A thought, intention, is purely imaginary, and it doesn't set anything into motion except things inside of the person. It doesn't set anything in motion outside of the person. It's only when we express it that it sets it into motion. So when you say it or breathe it, or even when you just use a sound to express it, when you go, ah, or when you go, or make any sounds like that, you're expressing that intention into reality. And when you do that, it sets into motion these little small automata, these real and imaginary automata, which are the smallest, most indivisible building blocks of matter. It sets those into motion, and they start gathering themselves up and putting themselves together and combining together to create and manifest what it is that you just expressed. So the portable gives a person an opportunity to learn that about themselves, and you can see immediately what it does to your energy field when you talk in a certain way. So if you talk negative stuff into it, or you talk gibberish into it, you can see what it does to your energy field. So you start learning how, boy, when I talk like this or when I breathe like that, my energy field looks great. And so you start learning what that means and how to do that. And sooner or later, it just becomes a habit and you don't even need the equipment anymore.
So on this software that you have, I have a copy of it, and you have screens that show different things. And I don't have it pulled up because I can't look at that thing and talk to you at exactly the same time. But when you breathe and focus on this using this headset and this microphone, pictures, well, things come up, symbols and pictures and other things start coming up, and it starts out looking like a television screen when it, with only white noise. What do those things tell us? If it shows up into a very cohesive picture, what does that mean? If it shows up in kind of a scattered picture, what does that mean to us? How can we use
well,
this tool?
Well, it would mean exactly like you said. If it looked very coherent, it would mean the person's in a coherent state. If it looked very scattered, it would indicate and imply that they're in a scattered state. But what you're talking about there is being able to pay attention to what's going on there. And the main focus or the main thing that people pay attention to is they want to go into the narrow focus mode where you're focused right on the pixels and you're looking at what kind of images is it making, what kind of patterns is it making. But there's another way of paying attention to something that's more diffused and absorbed than focused on it. So instead of looking directly at the screen, if you kind of look beyond it, kind of defocus on it, you basically see what's going on behind the scene, behind all those pixels. It's kind of like, I guess it's a manner of viewing that's very similar to what I've heard people say when they look at crystal balls or they look at scrying mirrors or anything like that. It's kind of a diffused and absorbed state instead of a focused state. And so we encourage people to do both, to not only spend some time in narrow focus and looking at the images and the patterns, but also to defocus on it so that you can begin to see what's going on behind the scene. And it also helps a person learn deep listening. So instead of just listening on the surface, you start listening what's deeper in a person's conversation. So you start having this experience of a deep listening. And basically what all this leads to is it leads to a situation called epiphany, which is basically the experience of seeing or hearing meaningful patterns in random images. And there's a lot of research done on that that shows that that can oftentimes lead to epiphanies and ahas, which can totally change people's lives just in a sudden moment. A person have an aha epiphany that's so powerful that it totally changes their life forever. So that's basically what we're shooting for with the Vibrasound and the Portical and all of our other technologies, is to help a person get into that state to where they have a sudden epiphany of how much bigger life really is. It's not all about these little mundane things that we're caught up in every day. It's a much, much bigger picture that just goes on forever. And you start learning your own place in it and what your meaning and purpose and what you're supposed to be doing right now and how you're supposed to be spending your time and how you're supposed to be feeling when you wake up in the morning and that sort of thing.
How did you find out that this really worked? Did you guys play with
well,
it and
tell,
have some amazing
I'll tell you
things
my,
happen?
I'll tell you, my first experience with it was the very first night I got the software. I was so excited. I just didn't believe it. It was back, I think, in 1996. And I ran home. I threw it on my, it was on a CD at the time, and I threw it on my computer, and I installed it, and I laid down, and my wife and I had just had our first child, who was still just a baby at the time. And I jumped down, I laid down on it, and I'm looking at that image, and the first thing that I saw was the face of a devil. And, I mean, complete with the horns and the goatee, and it was like snarling at me. And it looked just like pictures I've seen of Satan or the devil or anything like that. And it frightened the daylights out of me. I leapt up off of the Vibrasound, and I thought, wow, what was that? And then all kinds of thoughts started going through my mind, with the main one being that my partner was way too smart, and I knew that he wasn't a human being, and somehow I must have aligned myself with the devil, and this is now telling me all these things. And I just couldn't even go back to doing it that night, but the next night I went back and I tried it again, and I chose a different image, and I looked at it, and sure enough, there was that face again. And I couldn't even believe it. But instead of leaping up, I looked at it directly in its eyes, and I said, "Who are you, and what do you want?" And it said, "I am your unwholesomeness." And I said, "What's that?" And it said, all those things that you do that get in the way of you getting what you want. And I said, like what? And it said, and it really blew my mind because it didn't make any sense to me at first. It seemed so insignificant. But it said, I said, like what? And it said, well, you remember when you're driving your car and somebody pulls out in front of you and goes really slow and slows you down? I say, yeah. It says, you remember how you act when that happens? And I kind of sheepishly said, yeah. And it says, that does not serve you. Wouldn't it be better if you just didn't pay attention to them instead of chasing them down to tell them how much of an inconvenience they are? Wouldn't it be better just to focus on where you're going? So I promised myself that the next time it happened, that I would just turn at the next road. I would not stay behind this person. I would just turn at the next road. And so sure enough, a day or so later, it happened. And I turned on this road, and it turned out that the road was a cul-de-sac. I couldn't go anywhere. And I was in a hurry. I was supposed to meet a famous movie star, and I was late getting there. And I just couldn't believe that I made such an error, but I pulled on down into the cul-de-sac to turn around, and there was a man and a boy standing there having an argument. And I got out and talked to them, and in 5 minutes, I had them both thanking me from the bottom of their heart that I had solved a major issue for them. And I got back in my car, and I drove away, and I finally got to my destination and found out that the person I was supposed to meet was late, and I had actually beat them there.
And that's amazing. So
that,
how did you hear this? I mean, did you hear a conversation?
That,
how did you hear
after
it?
After that, it never happened. After that, it never happened to me again. Yeah, I hear it inside of my head, just like
okay,
everybody
so you,
hears.
You didn't hear it in the microphone. Head.
No, I hear it. I heard it in the feedback coming back to me.
So you heard that actually in the headphones?
I actually heard those words. Yeah, I actually heard those words, but I did not say them. It's just what I heard in the feedback coming back to me. And it had a profound change. It made a profound change in my life. And once I had done that, it stopped happening to me. And that's how I know, as silly as that sounds, that's how I know it really works, is because once I confronted it instead of running away from it, once I confronted it and did something about it, the whole issue just went away, and people stopped pulling out in front of me.
Wow.
So it's an amazing thing that we learn how we create our own reality by what we say. So somebody would pull out in front of me, and I would express something. No, I would yell, or I would mm-hmm. say something. I would express something, and it would just make it worse. I had no idea that I was actually causing the problem.
So if you were looking at the screens, because there are multiple screens on the computer screen that comes up. There are what, six of them, eight of them?
Uh-huh, right.
When the little forms start taking place, you were talking earlier about the four different ways that a sign, the pinpoint and the circle, and I forget what else, but do they show up differently? Do they show up as pinpoints or circular motions? Is that reflected on the screen?
Yes, you can see all of those kind of things on the screen. We will eventually get to the point to where the computer can do some of that deciding for you and say, tell you what you're actually looking at. We have a little bit of that going on now to where you can see some of the statistical data that's going on. You can see that. But ultimately, we'll make it to where a person can understand basically everything that's going on by having the computer actually speak back to them and tell them how they're aligning themselves.
So we failed to mention at the beginning of this show where people can find you. Where can they look at this and read about it?
Well, we have a website that's called www.theportical.com, which is the word the, and then portical is spelled P-O-R-T-A-C-L-E. Kind of like portal, but kind of like oracle at the same time, portical. And so they can find information on the website about the software and the downloads and how to go about doing it. They can also find information about how to set up sessions where they can actually come to one of our locations and have a session with a trained practitioner with some of the technologies.
Now, I missed you had two teaching segments, and one time my daughter got a kidney stone and had to go into the hospital, and the next time I was out of town. Can I catch those somewhere?
Yes, on our website, if you go to, theportico.com, and you go to the training segment of the website, and it asks for a password, mm-hmm. and they can get that password by emailing us. They can email me at info@theportico.com, and I can make sure that they get an invite to check out those webinars.
Okay, because I want to see those. I just think it's so wonderful. So where does the aspect of free will fall in there? Because you and I talked about this at the very beginning. So many people think that they have free will to do this or that and this can make anything happen just because they think a thought. That, looking at the software, one thing that I've learned, because it has real-time displays of numbers, I guess, measuring coherence and other things that you can tell us about. If you're not at a certain point, you're not going to make those things happen when you're trying to change, right? So how can they benefit from using this? What can they learn? In other words, how can it help people to really create the things that they want to create? What can they see on there? Talk about those real-time numbers and the pie chart that you have.
Right. They can see things like... I'm sorry, hold one second. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm back. They can learn how to, as I was mentioning earlier, they begin to learn that what they say sets up their reality. So it starts helping them learn how when they speak in a certain way, this sort of thing happens. When they speak in another way, something else happens. And you can see in those numbers, you can kind of see in real time, how all of those things are happening and how what kind of state of mind the person is in. And you can see things like their fundamental frequencies. You can see what music note that they're falling in, which has a lot of implications about the chakras that are active at the time. They can see their manifestation cycle. They can see where they're at between expression, action, and manifestation. They can also see their energy flow. And which, how much energy they have, and which way it's flowing. So we find that most people are acting, much are functioning kind of like black holes, drawing everything into themselves. And every once in a while, we'll find a person that has this dominant outward radiation to where they're radiating that out into their environment. But that's a very rare condition, and but we can identify that.
I don't think people get that.
We all have an energy flow in and out of ourselves, and for most people, as I mentioned, the flow's inward. So we walk around in life, and we're pulling in what we need to resolve the difference between our actual and our potential self. But when a person kind of gets to a level to where they have resolved some of that, and they balance some of that out, they don't have all those differences going on. So they actually... instead of becoming a black hole, the energy starts moving the other way, so it moves outward from them and into their environment. And people with this dominant outward radiation, we call it, they're able to create their own reality. These are the people that are sitting in the back of the room. They're not on the stage. They're sitting in the back of the room controlling everything that's going on in the room just by what they've said to everybody that's in the room. So these are some of the kinds of things that a person can learn by using the portico. You basically learn how to create your own reality by paying attention to what you say.
You've sent me, in your manual, there's a pie chart dividing these real-time numbers into, what, four different categories, isn't it? Is it three or four?
four.
And what do those categories represent? And because I want people to have an idea of if they did this, what these categories in life can mean to them and how they can use it to determine if they're really having an effect with what they're doing.
Well, we call what you're talking about, we call that the manifestation cycle. And it's kind of it's the cycle that an intention goes through between the time that is in first intended and when it manifests in the world. So for an intention to be made and then manifest in the world, it has to go through this cycle. And if you look at that as a circle and then you crosshair that vertically and horizontally, you wind up with four quadrants. And the quadrants are thought, expression, action, and manifestation. So first you have a thought about something, then you express it, you write it down, you tell somebody about it, you make a plan of it, you plan the event, or you draw a model of the machine that you've invented or whatever. So you express the thought. Then once you have the expression done, you can take action on that. And once you've taken action on that and assembled all the parts, then it manifests in the real world. But what we find is that people will get hung up in those certain areas. So you find people that can think very, very deeply, but they can't very well express what it is that they're thinking. Or you'll find somebody who talks and talks and talks all the time, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, but they never really do it. Or you'll find a person who is always doing something, always making something or creating something, but they can never finish up before they jump onto something else. Or you'll find people that can function in all four of those quadrants. And that would be a good employee, someone that could think about something, express it, act on it, and then manifest it. That way you don't have to micromanage a person like that. If they're a person that gets kind of stuck in one of those areas, then you kind of have to move in there and help them move on through it. So the portico basically helps a person learn how to watch themselves as they go through these different transformations that they want to go through and how to make sure that they don't skip any of those things, because If you're in the action mode and you have not fully expressed it correctly yet, then you will wind up staying in the action mode. You can never get it done. You have to actually drop back prior to the action mode, back into the expression mode, and express it a little better, get the plan a little bit better before you take action on it. So following that flow is really important, and with the portico, you're able to kind of monitor yourself doing that.
That's amazing. So we have about 15 minutes left, or 10 minutes left maybe. What would you like to talk about that we either have or have not already mentioned? Anything you want to cover?
Well, I don't want to say too much more about the science of it, because we're going to cover that next week. But we can talk about why, you know, we're all doing this, why we're all seeking transformation and why we're all trying to affect change on ourselves and the world. And there are a lot of different ways of doing that. There's so many methods that people have out there of doing all these things. We just have taken this way of going about affecting change on people because we know that they're in front of their computers most of the time anyway, and we know that they're used to that kind of technology, and we've learned that computers can actually have a small degree of artificial awareness as well as artificial intelligence, so they can act very well as an extension of ourselves. So I guess the main problem that we have is that we were born with, the good news is we were born with the greatest technology the universe could ever develop. Human beings will never develop a technology that's superior to who they already are. And in fact, if you look around right now, all the development of the technology around the world is going in that direction right now, to where we're being, the greatest technologies are robots. So we're basically just trying to replace ourselves, which we will never be able to do because the world's got at least a 20 billion year head start on us through evolution doing it. The problem is, the bad news is that we were born without a user manual. So we've got all this high technology, but we don't have a user manual how to do it, how to use it. So that's just basically what we've been up to. We've been up to creating these user manuals that how do I drive this machine that I'm already walking around in? What happens when I push this button or when I switch this lever or when I turn that knob? We know all about those things on our computers. We know what happens when you hit all those different keys. But very few of us have spent much time finding out what happens when you push all those keys and buttons inside of ourselves. So that's basically what we're trying to do with the Portico and our other technologies, is help a person learn how to drive themselves, learn how to operate themselves in a better way. And we know from all kind of observations that all human suffering stems from these two differences between themselves. Like, we can observe that when there's better integration between an instrument and a player, that more beautiful music comes out of it. You can observe that when there's a better connection between an operator and a machine, the machine breaks down less and it has better productivity. So there's when there's better connection between a car and a driver, he can win the race. So we have all these different ways of observing if what I'm saying is true, that all human suffering stems from the difference between these two different aspects of oneself. And when you begin to resolve that, then you kind of get out of that day-to-day mundane life and you wake up every morning going, wow, I can't believe how awesome this is and how lucky I am and how privileged I am and how appreciative I am of all these, of life. It's just the most amazing thing. And it's not something to be, you know, people see, they get the words wrong. They think that responsibility is some kind of duty. They don't realize that it's a gift of being able for them to respond however they want to respond to anything. There's a pharmacy inside their brain, and they're the pharmacist. They can write a prescription to feel any way they want to feel. And this is basically what the Portico is teaching, is that we have this pharmacy inside of our brain, and we're the pharmacist, and you can write a prescription to feel any way you want to feel, regardless of what's going on in your external world, regardless of what other people are doing or saying or becoming. You get to write your own prescription for how you behave and what you do in your life. And these manners of being and manners of doing is what we're teaching with the Portico.
Could you take just a minute? I've always wondered about the musical notes on the Portico. What do the various notes tell us?
Well, a lot of people have tied those to the chakras. So most people will see the C note as the lower root chakra and working all the way up to the B note being the crown chakra. And there are a lot of other voice analysis.
I'd say that the B note... Repeat those again. I missed that.
The C note is generally seen as the lower root chakra, and working all the way up through D and E and F and G and A and B to the top at the throat, at the crown chakra. So that would mean that the throat chakra is the G note, and the third eye is the A note, and so you can kind of figure them out from there. So there are a lot of different teachings out there right now about how those music notes relate to health, mental, emotional, spiritual states, and all those kinds of things. A person can kind of get a handle on some of that in our manual, but I also make references in the manual of other technologies that they can check out that are more into that. Because you kind of have to keep in mind, one thing that I didn't mention, Eva, was that our whole company is almost 180 degrees out of phase with the whole concept of healing, the whole allopathic concept of finding what's wrong and fixing it. What we have found is it's much more elegant and efficient to identify what's right and enhance it. And we find that when we do that it kind of drives all the other stuff out the back door. And in fact, we have tons of mathematical proof now from our supercomputer that when you iterate the output of a system back into the input, you actually amplify it. So when you get sick and you go to the doctor and you talk about what's wrong, you're iterating it back into the input, and there's no way it can ever go away. So our process really doesn't really go there. Our process basically identifies what's right, and then it just enhances that. And then what we find is that all the other stuff gets driven out the back door, and you don't really have to address it.
I totally get that. You know, I just had a heart attack last September, and I decided to do holistic treatment, and that was all. But I did go to the doctor back in June because I wanted to do allopathic testing so I could prove how much better or not that I'm doing. And when I walked into the laboratory to do the treadmill thing, the girl who was doing the sonar had negative looks on her face and said negative things. When I walked in the door, I felt like $1 million. When I walked out, I was in a severe depression. It was only like 15 minutes. What she said affected me. And if the next day, if my friend Steve Sinatra had not called me and said, Eva, worry about how you feel, not about her numbers, not about what she said. How do you feel? That's what really matters. It proved it to me. Her words in 5 minutes put me in a depression when I was great. So right. I really believe that.
Yeah, so you learn basically how to be able to empathize with things without sympathizing with them. And that's another thing that the protocol teaches. There's a huge difference between empathy and sympathy. And when you sympathize, when you go into sympathetic resonance with something, you take it on. But you can empathize with it without taking that on. And that's basically, I think, another thing that the protocol is really great at teaching a person, is to how to remain in your own energy and in your own field and not really take on what somebody else is doing.
Well, it was it. I thought it was great. Is there anything else that, what about your partner? Did he do anything that was exciting to him or that opened his eyes? How's he involved? What did he learn?
Well, I would love to have you interview him sometime, because it's hard to get a lot out of him. He's one of these hermit kind of scientists that prefers to stay in the laboratory and do all of his coding and everything all the time. But he's an amazing genius. He's taught at computer schools all of his life. He's one of those child prodigies that, you know, graduated college when he was, you know, still just a kid, and has worked his way through all of the esoteric, the esoteric society, so to speak, and worked his way all the way up to the top of those and got to the very top of those and realized what was going on there, so he kind of backed out from that. So he's got this amazing combination of technical ability with esoteric knowledge that's quite remarkable and unlike anything I've ever experienced before. So I feel very privileged and honored to have him as my partner. And recently we've taken on a third partner, a lady from Canada, who is helping fund the company and helping us get all of our ducks in order for the business world. She's a very savvy business person who is really working hard to help us do this. But we're finally on the launching pad. After all these years, you know, you probably heard of me back when we were in Atlanta back in the 80s. And we've been working so hard to bring this to the world, and finally, we're on the launching pad. So keep your fingers crossed. And if Obama and the rest of them don't mess us all up, we'll have a really great year this year.
And where can people get a copy of your program? How do they do that?
They can go to that www.theportical.com, and they can read all about it and download it from there.
Okay. Do you have a book coming out anytime soon?
I'm hoping to. My partners are really working on me to have a book. I guess the closest thing to that right now would be my blog on the website. So I've been trying to, what I do is so complex, it's hard to get it all together, you know, for a person to sit down and get through all of it at one time. So I've been trying to split it up into little concepts and just write these concepts as blogs on the website. So if you can go there, just go to the blog section, you can read pretty much everything we've ever said about what we've done, because you actually have access to our entire archives on the website, and you can read all the way back to when we started.
Well, I look forward to having you back next week because I want to go over everything that I want to have it up on my screen so we can talk about all the things that I see and learn this so I can share it with everybody. So join us next week, everybody. Don't miss it out because you're going to learn a lot that you, about this same technology that we've not covered tonight. And Don, thank you so much for coming on. It's great. And go to www.theportico.com and take a look at what Don's doing. You'll be amazed. Have a good evening and take care. Good night.